try another two. Let's try Jesse. I think we've got Tom Jones's It's Not Unusual. Queued up. This is a Les Reed tune. Les Reed is the producer, writer on the song.
Les Reed, arranger,
And he's the arranger and producer on the session.
That's right.
And Les has said that this was a spectacular tune in 65, I guess this tune was.
It must have been 64, 65,
And that it really kind of startled Denmark Street, the publishing community.
It was a kind of different concept of pop music then, because I know Les very well, and my wife Judy knows June very well. And I can remember June calling up Judy and saying, "Listen, it's on the radio, it's on the radio." And once it got on the radio, once it took off worldwide.
And you're drumming up here, I think.
Yeah.
Right. So let's listen there, Jesse. That was Big Jim playing guitar there, right?
I was on rhythm, Jim playing the solo stuff.
You were on there too?
Yeah, I was on the rhythm guitar and chinky chinky.
So, Andy, you were sharing earlier about the doing the cymbal part, the speed of the cymbal part.
Holding
it together.
Yeah.
The actual tempo of that thing is fast and it's pushing as well, you know. And you have to sort of develop some other way of approaching it, you know. I'll just show you what I mean. We normally get a rock and roll thing would be in the middle of the road, you know, like maybe like. You know, but this thing is. You know?
Yeah.
And you can't use a normal hand action. And I used to do a thing with the same type of thing, but only with fingers, you know, like going but that wasn't loud enough.
Right.
That wasn't loud enough for this thing. So instead of the fulcrum being here, it was back here, and it was like a hand and wrist, you know, like that.
Nowadays, on the sample, you just go. Thanks to the intro.
Where you recorded that? Where that session was?
In Decca 2.
It was at Decca 2.
Yeah.
So what was Decca 2 like?
Well, Decca 2, well, the Decca then, which is was in Broadhurst Gardens, Hampstead, they had three studios. There's a great big studio at the back that we used to call the tram shed. And then there was the number 2, which was down underneath, a little small studio, number one studio was up above, the front, which went up in tiers, like it was a very strange studio. But number 2 was down underneath, very compact, very good to work in, a good sound, and it felt good. And also, there was the corridor up the back with these two ladies that made wonderful cheese rolls, but that was beside. But my particular memory of Tom Jones, not particularly on that session, but we were doing something, might have been the green grass of home, and Tom couldn't get the phrasing on this, you see, so he said, Peter Sullivan, the producer, said to Tom, he said, go on a bit with Strong, the chord, you see, so he came with that, and I was going to change it, but you know what Tom said? I said, Tom, for God's sake, he said, oh, I'm sorry, I was singing a song. And it was such a loud voice, he's got, as you will have noticed. But that was a great tune to do, and Les did Tom Jones and also Engelbert Humperdinck. I don't know if anybody heard of him, Engelbert.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he had a fantastic hit called The Last Waltz, which was fantastic in England and Europe. I don't know whether it came over here, did it, Gorbia? Last one. Well, it was another 2 to 5, 2:35, 30 or something. We had 15 minutes left in this session, and Les pulled out this chart. Miss Peter said, "Well, can we do one more?" So Les pulled out quickly around the thing, and we did the last voice in 15 minutes. Voice it's a credit to the guys like Andy, I suppose, myself and all the others, and the arrangements and the engineers, really, who had to get it all together in one go. And so it's amazing the amount of hits that were done in like 15, 20, 25 minutes that you hear, and you think, wow, we knocked that out at the end of this, or that was nothing, and it suddenly becomes an enormous hit. So that was a strange time. Now they kind of plan everything, you know. They know it's going to be a hit. They've got the hype behind it. They've got everything. But then we used to sort of, as they say, throw it against the wall and see what would stick. You know, and that's what their philosophy was. That's why we used to do 15, 20 titles in one day, and they might pick two of those out for the A side and the B side. You know.
Now Les Reed worked with a lot of people. He was a music songwriter, producer, music director.
Pickety-Witch.
Worked with Dave Clark Five, for example.
Yes, yes.
And we had hoped to have Bobby Graham here tonight, too, but Bobby's...
Well, if Bobby was the same situation as like Andy did. Andy played on some of the Beatles tracks, but nobody would admit it. I mean, I know it, but the Business in General knows that Andy did a lot of... what's his name? Ringo Starr. It was supposed to have done, but it was kind of Andy playing, you know. And this kind of happened a lot, you know, the people. And I remember I played on a couple of Dave Clark, and the Dave Clark fan club is like they're so neurotic about it. Somebody found out and put it on their email list, and I got like filthy emails, and how dare you say you were playing with Dave Clark? Dave Clark didn't. Once they find out that Bobby Graham played drums instead of Dave Clark, I don't know what's going to happen. But still, they do know, but they don't admit it.
Even during the '60s, Dave Clark repeatedly denied that it was Bobby Clark.
Yeah, well, he didn't. It's like, as I said, talking about it earlier, like Dave Bowie. Because there's a whole big thing where Andy and my colleagues that are trying to get the money that should have been paid to us over in the 60s and 70s, but some kind of got filtered off. And even people like David Bowie, who's a bass player called Herbie Flowers and sort of played on, David Bowie said, I'm not going to admit that any session musicians played on my records because it spoiled my image. He said, that's not what I did. Because kind of at one time, session musicians were looked upon as sort of like something, you crept in through the back door and did the bit and threw him out the back door with a few pounds in your pocket, you know. So, and the American guys are telling, I don't know if you've seen that film about...
Standing in the Shadows of Mordor.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Same scene, you know, thanks, Don. Yeah. I mean, suddenly they turn up for work, the studio gone and everything, you know, and it was no money and a bit sad. But that was good, Tom Jones was good.